I'm Kelly Beatty, the executive editor of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of what's overhead during October evenings. But first, let me draw your attention to some nice sights in the morning sky. Most of you are already getting up before dawn anyway, or you can if you really try, so poke your head out for a few minutes during your early morning routine. You'll see a dazzling beacon about halfway up in the east. That's the planet Venus. And, for the first week of October, a crescent moon is nearby, its tips pointing the way upward to peach-colored Mars, which is nearly overhead. We're waiting for our first frost up here in New England, and nights have gotten quite chilly. So before you head out, make sure you're dressed warmly and maybe grab a blanket. Don't put away the lawn furniture just yet. Those reclining loungers are great for sky watching. The only other thing you'll need is a spot that's far away from bright lights, with a clear view all around the horizon. Okay, let's head out. Evenings during the first half of October will be more or less moon-free. New moon occurs on the 11th and full moon on the night of the 25th. So let's take a quick look around. Look to the left of where the sun set, and you should see the planet Jupiter lingering not far above the horizon. All summer long, the king of planets was riding high in the sky, but it's edging farther west and lower down with each passing night. In early October, Jupiter sets about 3 hours after the sun, but by Halloween it'll be just 2 hours. Now, make a quarter turn to your right so that you're facing northwest. There's our old friend, the Big Dipper, not far above the horizon. Its bowl is on the right, and its handle is sticking out toward the left. As the evening's starry sky pinwheels through the changing seasons, the Big Dipper does a slow counterclockwise dance around Polaris, the North Star. And where is Polaris, you might ask? Some people think it's the brightest star in the sky, but that's not the case. Still, it's easy to spot. Find the two stars on the right side of the Big Dipper's bowl. Now, draw an imaginary line through them, and follow that line upward and to the right until you spot a medium bright star pretty much all by itself. There you go, that's Polaris. Now, clench your fist and hold it out straight. Three fists to the right of Polaris, and a bit higher up, you'll see a group of five stars crudely shaped like a three, or maybe you'll see them as a broad W tipped up on its left corner. The whole pattern is a little bigger than your fist. This is the constellation Cassiopeia, who's a queen in Greek mythology. You'll see that Cassiopeia and the Big Dipper are situated on opposite sides of the North Star, so that when one is high up, the other is low down. The Big Dipper dominates in spring and summer, while Cassiopeia rules in fall and winter. Now swing your gaze up, way up, to overhead. You should see three widely spaced stars forming a big triangle two or three fists on a side. This is called the Summer Triangle, though it's highest up and easiest to spot not during summer itself, but in the months afterward, like now. The corner of the triangle farthest west, in the direction nearest sunset, is marked by Vega. It's the main star in a tidy constellation called Lyra, for the lyre or harp. Farther east and closer to Polaris is the star Deneb. It marks the tail of a giant swan, Cygnus, apparently flying south for the winter along the Milky Way. You should be able to make out the swan's wingtips and long neck. Or try picturing Deneb as the top of a large cross about two fists long. The triangle's third star is Altair, the head of a celestial eagle, called Aquila, that's winging its way toward the swan. The ancient Greeks imagined Aquila to be a messenger from mighty Zeus, who rewarded his faithful friend with a place among the stars after years of service. In Chinese folklore, there's a wonderful story about a young cowherd, represented by Altair, and a weaving maid, played by Vega. The two were so much in love that they neglected their heavenly duties, so, as punishment, the celestial gods placed them on opposite riverbanks separated by the Milky Way. They were allowed to meet on only one night each year, on the seventh night of the seventh moon. And that's when all the magpies of the world swooped together to form a bridge for the lovers to cross. But by dawn, the pair must again separate for another year, and the morning dew is the lovers' tears of separation. This month we celebrate another folk tradition, Halloween. So go ahead and trot out the pumpkins and fuzzy spiders, then try doing what I do. When trick-or-treaters invade our neighborhood, I set up my telescope on our driveway so that all those little goblins and their parents can take a quick peek through the eyepiece. It's always a big hit, and you really should try it. This Halloween, the moon will not be up until quite late. Jupiter will be up, but very low at dusk. It'll be challenging to spot without a clear shot to the southwest horizon. You can always tell the kids the story of the weaving maid and the cowherd. Oh, one more thing. Would you like to take part in something called the Great Worldwide Star Count? From October 1st through the 15th, stargazers just like you will be looking skyward to find the faintest stars they can see. The target area for the Northern Hemisphere is Cygnus, the Swan. It's a fantastic way to find out how your sky stacks up compared to other places, and, frankly, how bad your light pollution really is. To learn more, go to skyandtelescope.com/starcount. In fact, skyandtelescope.com is a great destination for all kinds of sky-watching tips. Next month, we'll take a sky ride on a flying horse. Until then, I wish you clear skies.